This is the Hall of Memories, some call it the Hall of Judgment, but of course there is no great judge sitting in solemn state who will look you up and down and then weigh your soul in the balance to see if it is wanting, and then, if it is, toss you into eternal fires. No, there is nothing like that. In the Hall of Memories, each person sees himself or herself, and each person judges whether he or she has been successful. If not, why not and what can be done about it? Now, he took Maligruber's arm and urged him gently forward, I leave you here. Go into the Hall of Memories, take as much time as is required, and when you come out another person will be waiting for you. Goodbye. With that he turned and walked away. Maligruber stayed there with a strange feeling of dread. He did not know what he was going to see, and he did not know what he was going to do about what he was going to see. But he showed no sign of moving, he seemed like a statue of a street sweeper without his barrow, and at last some strange force turned him gently and pushed him along in the direction of the portal of the Hall of Memories. Maligruber entered. And so it came to pass that Leonides Manuel Maligruber entered unto the Hall of Memories. And there he saw the history of himself and his associates since the beginning of time as an entity. He learned much. He learned of the mistakes of the past. He learned of things for which to prepare for the future, and by means unknown on the earth his comprehension was expanded, his character purified, and Leonides Manuel Maligruber left the Hall of Memories at some undetermined time. It may have been days later, it may have been weeks later, or it may have been months later, and then he sat down with a group of counselors and planned his return to Earth so that, a task having been completed during the next life, he could return again to a much better plane of astral life. Chapter 7. The great president slumped back in his luxurious swivel chair, clutching grimly at his chest. There was that pain again, that awful nagging, gnawing pain which made him think that his chest was being squeezed in a vice. He sat back gasping, wondering what he should do. Should he call the doctor and go to hospital? Or should he stick it out for a little longer? Mr. Hoagy McCogwaska, the president of Glittering Gizmos, was a man in deep, deep trouble, trouble very similar to that which had terminated the life of his father. The firm, founded by his father, was prospering so much that Hoagy wished that his father could be with him to witness the success. But Hoagy leaned back in his chair and started groping for his amyl nitrate capsules. Breaking it in a paper handkerchief, he felt the fumes going into his chest giving him relief, relief for a time. With Hoagy's ailment there would be no real relief until life itself terminated the pain, but amyl nitrate kept him going for the time and he was grateful for it. He felt that his work was not finished yet. He thought of his father long dead, thought of how they used to talk together more like two brothers than father and son. He glanced at his wide picture window with the tinted glass across the top. He thought of the time when his father had stood beside him and put his arm around his shoulder. Together they had looked at the factory building and the father had said, Hoagy, m'boy, one day all this will be yours. Look after it well, it's my brainchild, Hoagy, it will keep you in comfort and prosperity for all the days of your life. Then his father had sat down heavily in his chair and like Hoagy now had clasped his chest with his two hands and groaned with the pain. Hoagy had really loved his father. He remembered how he had sat across from his father one day on the desk which seemed to call us to be acres in extent, highly polished. A wonderful desk indeed, hand-carved by an old craftsman in Europe. Hoagy had said, Father, how do we get such a peculiar name? I can't understand it. Many people have asked me and I have never been able to tell them. You've got some time this afternoon, Father. The board meeting went off well, tell me what happened before you came to Canada. Father McCogwaska leaned back in his chair, the chair upon which Hoagy now sat, and lit an immense Havana cigar. Then puffing comfortably he swung his feet up onto the desk, folded his hands across his ample stomach and said, Velmboy. V comes from Upper Silesia in Europe. Vivast a Juden but your mutter and I vivast told that even in Canada there was the discrimination against us Judes, so your mutter and I V said Vel V will take care of that real fast, V will become Catholics, they seem to have the most money and they has the most saints to look after them. Your mother and I, we looked around and we talked of different names that we should have, and then I thought of your uncle's cousin on your mother's side. Good man was he. He made good living too, he was Jew just like you and me, but he made good living washing hogs. He got hogs all washed up real good and clean and proper, he scrubbed up petrol in day hides and they come clean just like a baby's backside, they had a rosy glow on them just like a slapped baby's backside. And a judge's day always said, well, well, da hog him must from a certain man have comed, day vast so good and prettified. Hoagie's father had swung his feet down to the floor again while he leisurely reached out for his special knife which had a spear point attached to it. With that he jabbed the butt end of his cigar which was not drawing any too well, then having got the smoke flowing as he wanted, he resumed his talk. I said to mine frau dat is vat we will do. We will call ourselves Hogswaska. Dat seems to be a good name American continent-wise, da has day funny names there. He had stopped a while and rolled his cigar about between his lips before continuing, mine frau she say to me we should do something to make prettified up more Catholic, so she say we got have a Mac like day do with the Irishers, da Irishers day had the Mac on day name which sort of keeps them out of storms people say MIT that Irish must be. So I said to myself and I said to mine frau at the same time dat is vat we will do, we will call myself McCogwaska, and from now on we have to be the Catholics. Again the old man had stopped while he ruminated a bit more. Hoagie always knew when his father was in a contemplative mood because the inevitable cigar was rolled backwards and forwards between his parents' lips. And then there came a great burst of smoke again and his father said, mine friends I told of this and day said to me saints in plenty you should have, special patron saint you should have like day do with the Catholics in Ireland. So I did not know that to have for saints, I'd never spoken out to no saints, so my friend he say to me, you vant a good saint? Then a good saint for you your patron saint should be Street Luca. Hoagie had looked at his father in amazement and said, well father, I've never heard of Street Luca. When I went to the seminary the brothers there used to teach us all about saints but they never taught me anything about Street Luca. Yeah, young boy, said Father McCogwaska, then I will tell you why the saint he got the name. Mine friend he say to me, Moses, he say, you always was one for running after the filthy Luca, you say to me many times, Moses, money has no smell. But others say he is running after filthy Luca so that better saint could you have, Moses, than Street Luca? But now Hoagie shuddered as a fresh spasm of pain racked his chest. For the moment he thought he was going to die, he felt that his chest was being crushed, squeezed, the air being squeezed out of his lungs, but once again he sniffed at the amyl nitrate and gradually the pain eased. Gingerly and, oh! So cautiously he moved slightly and found that the main pain had ended, but he decided it would be a good idea to stop for a bit, put work aside for a bit, have a rest, think about the past. He thought again about his father. Years before his father had started the business on what he called a shoestring. The father and the mother had left Upper Silesia after one of the annual pogroms there and had come to Canada where they had become landed immigrants. Father Moses found there was no work for him so he went into farming for a time acting as a farm laborer instead of the skilled jeweler for which he had been trained. One day he saw another farm laborer playing about with a small stone which had a hole in it. The man, on being questioned, had told him that it brought much peace of mind when he played with this stone and so he kept it with him, and when the boss farmer told him off for being too slow or too dumb he played about with this polished stone and then calmness swept over him. Hoagie's father had thought about that stone for days, and then he came to a great decision. He got together all the money he could, he borrowed money, and he worked like a slave to get more, and then he started a little business called Glittering Gizmos. They made little things which had no earthly use at all but most of them were gilded by the vacuum process and people thought when they had these golden objects in their pockets that they became tranquil. A friend once asked him, what is this thing, Moses, what good does it do? Moses replied, ah my friend that is a good question. That is a glittering gizmo. No one knows, But Devanta knows, so Day spends good money buying them to find out. No one knows what it is. No earthly use has ever been found for one, but they advertise it as new, and it has now become a status symbol to own one. In fact, for a special charge we will have a person's initials engraved on it. You must remember that here on this American continent anything new is that Devant, anything old it is garbage. Well, we takes garbage and we gild it up a bit to make it look prettified and we advertise it as the latest thing, guaranteed to do this and guaranteed to do that. But of course it doesn't do a thing, the buyer does the good by the way he or she is thinking, and if they think there is nothing in it then they don't like to admit they have been conned, so they tries to sell the things to show others that have been conned also. I makes for myself quite a packet. Good gracious, Moses, exclaimed his friend, don't tell me that you are selling rubbish to the unsuspecting public. Moses McCoguasker had raised his grey eyebrows in mock horror and then said, goodness me, mine friend, you don't think I would be swindling the public, do you? Are you calling me a crook? The friend laughed at him and replied, whenever I meet a Catholic who has the first name of Moses, I wonder what made him change from a Jew into a Catholic. Old Moses had laughed heartily and told his friend the story of his life, building up a business in Upper Silesia, being famed for good quality, being famed for fair dealing and low prices, and then he said jovially, it all went fuffed. The Russians came along and they took everything. They makes me a pauper and they turned me from mine house, and I was an honest man giving good deals and selling genuine articles. So I turn myself around, I becomes a dishonest man selling junk for high prices and people respect me more. Look at me now, I have mine own business, mine own factory, mine own Cadillac, and I have mine patron saint, Street Luca. He laughed aloud as he went to a little cabinet fixed to one corner of his office. Slowly he unlocked the door, slowly he turned to his friend and said, come and sigh here. His friend laughed with glee as he jumped to his feet crying out, Moses, you're speaking the wrong language. You don't speak German now, you are supposed to be a Canadian citizen, you should say, get a load of this, bud. He walked over to where old Moses was tantalizingly holding the cupboard door barely ajar. Then suddenly the cupboard door was swung wide open and the friend saw an ebony plinth, and upon the ebony plinth the dollar sign in gold stood up, and on the top of the dollar sign there was a halo. He looked at old Moses without comprehension and Moses laughed loud at his expression. That is mine saint, mine Street Luca, he said. Filthy Luca is money, mine saint is clean dollars. Intercom button and called to his secretary, come in, Miss Williams, come in. A very businesslike young woman entered and sat demurely at the edge of the desk. I want you to call my attorney, I want him to come here to see me, I think it is time I made my will. Oh, Mr. Hoagie, said the secretary in alarm, you do look pale, do you think I should get Dr. Johnson to come along to see you? No, no, my dear, said Hoagie, I think I have been working too hard and one can't be too careful, you know. So you just call the attorney and ask him to come and see me at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning here, and that is all the business we will do this afternoon. He gestured with his hand and the secretary went out again, wondering if Hoagie McCoguasker had a premonition that he was going to die or something. Hoagie sat back in the chair thinking of the past and the future as well, as he supposed his father had sat on numerous occasions. He thought of what he had heard from Miss Williams, and then his mind drifted to the life of Father McCoguasker. Miss Williams told Hoagie about how she had gone into the office and found Father McCoguasker sitting silent and somber at his desk. As she came in he was looking up at the sky watching wispy clouds as they sped over his factory buildings. Then he moved and uttered a deep, deep sigh. Miss Williams stopped and looked at the old man, seriously afraid that he was going to die in front of her. Miss Williams, he had said, mine car I should have already. Tell the chauffeur to come to the front right now, home I should go. Miss Williams gave her urbane, businesslike acknowledgement and Father McCoguasker sat back with his hands clasped against his ample paunch. Soon his office door opened and Miss Williams came in again looking with great concern as she saw him hunched up at his desk. The car is at the door, sir, she said, may I assist you with your coat? The old man stood up somewhat shakily and said, oi, oi, Miss Williams, you think maybe too old I am getting, hey? The secretary smiled and walked across to him carrying his coat. Clumsily he put his arms into the sleeves and she moved around to the front and carefully pulled the coat down and then buttoned it for him. Here is your briefcase, sir, she said. I haven't seen your new Cadillac, you know, I will see you down to your car if you don't mind. The old man grunted acquiescence and together they moved into the elevator and down to the street. The uniformed chauffeur had jumped to attention and quickly opened the car door. No, no, boy, no, no, I will sit in front with you for a change, said the old man as he shuffled around and got into the front of the car. With a wave to Miss Williams he settled and the chauffeur drove off. Mr. McCoguska Sr. lived away in the country, some 25 miles distant from his office, and he looked about him as the car sped through traffic and out into the suburbs beyond. Looked about him as though he had never seen the scenery before or as though he were seeing it for the last time. In somewhat less than an hour, for the traffic was quite heavy, the car drew up in front of McCoguska Mansion. Mrs. McCoguska was at the door waiting because Miss Williams, like a good secretary, had telephoned Mrs. McCoguska to say that she thought the boss was having an attack of something. Ah Moses, I have been so worried about you this day, said Mrs. McCoguska. I think you have been doing too much maybe, we should have a vacation. You are seeing too much of that office. Old Moses had dismissed the chauffeur and walked somewhat wearily into his house. It was the house of a wealthy man, but of a wealthy man who had not got too much taste. There were priceless antiques and garish modern things side by side. But somehow the furnishings and the furniture, old and new, blended together in that almost mystical way which old Jews from Europe had, so that instead of a hodgepodge almost like a junk shop, the interior was quite attractive. Mrs. McCoguska took her husband's arm and said, come and sit down, Moses, you look as if you could fall at any moment. I think I will send for Dr. Johnson. No, no, Mama, no, no. We have things that we got to talk of before Dr. Johnson we will call in, said Moses. Then he relapsed into his chair and put his head in his hands, thinking deeply. Mama, said Moses, do you remember the old religion? Jude's is our family religion. How come I don't call in a rabbi and have a talk with him? There are a lot of things in my mind I should clear. The wife busied herself getting a drink for the old man, carefully putting in ice, then bringing the glass over to him. But how can we go back to the Jewish religion when we are such good Catholics, Moses? She asked. The old man mused upon it as he slowly sipped his evening drink, and then he said, well, well, Mama, when all the chips are down, no more a false front should we put up. We cannot return to the land of our fathers, we can return to our old religion. I think maybe a rabbi I should see. Nothing more was said for quite a time, but at dinner the old man had suddenly dropped his knife and fork with a clatter and leaned back in his chair gasping. No, no, Moses, enough of this, I have had already, said his wife running to the telephone. Dr. Johnson, I call him now. Quickly she ran her finger down the automatic telephone number indicator and then pressed a button. The latest electronic marvel whirred and buzzed as the machine churned out the home number of Dr. Johnson. After a very short interval a voice had answered and Mrs. McCoguska said, Dr. Johnson, Dr. Johnson, so quickly you should come, my husband so sick is with the chest squeezings. The doctor, knowing that he had a very good paying patient, hesitated not one moment. All right, Mrs. McCoguska, I will be over within 10 minutes, he said. The woman put down the telephone and returned to her husband, sitting on the arm of the chair beside him. Mama, Mama, said the old man, holding his chest between his two hands, do you remember how we came from the old country? Do you remember how we came by the cheapest way possible, ground together like cattle in pens? We've worked hard, Mama, you and me, we've had a harsh life, and I am not sure that we did the right thing to become Catholics. We were born Jews, Jews we should always be. We should return, maybe, to the old religion. But we cannot do that, Moses, we just cannot do it. Whatever would the neighbors say? We'd never live it down, you know. But I suggest we go away for vacation and perhaps you will feel better then. I expect Dr. Johnson can suggest a nurse to go with us to look after you. She jumped up quickly at the sound of the bell. The maid was already on the way to the door and within seconds Dr. Johnson was ushered into the room. Well, well, Mr. McCogwaska, said the doctor jovially, and what is the matter? You have a pain in your chest. Ah, I expect it is another attack of angina. One of the big symptoms, you know, is a strong, strong feeling that one is going to die. Mrs. McCogwaska had nodded her head gravely. Yes, doctor, he has had this feeling for some time, a feeling that he can't go on much longer, so I thought I should call you urgently. Quite right, Mrs. McCogwaska. Quite right, that is what we are here for, you know, said the doctor. But let us get him up to bed and then I will give him a thorough examination. I have with me a portable cardiograph and we will try it on him. Soon old Moses had been ensconced in an immense double bed with the padded quilt in the old European fashion. The doctor soon gave him an examination, looking graver and graver as he did so, and then at last he said, well, I am afraid you will have to stay in bed for some time. You are a very sick man, you know, you have been burning the candle at both ends and in the middle as well, and at your age you cannot afford to do that. He closed the cardiograph machine, put away his stethoscope, and washed his hands in the luxurious adjoining bathroom. Then he shook hands with his patient and together with Mrs. McCogwaska walked down the staircase. On the ground floor he beckoned to Mrs. McCogwaska and whispered, can we go into a private room to talk about it? She led the way into the old man's study and shut the door. Mrs. McCogwaska, the doctor said, I am afraid that your husband is very seriously ill. I am afraid that if there is any more exertion your husband will not last. What about your son Hoagie, Mrs. McCogwaska, isn't he at college? Yes, doctor, replied Mrs. McCogwaska, he is at Balliol College. If you think I should then I will telephone him immediately and ask him to return. He is a good boy, a very good boy indeed. Yes, replied the doctor, I know he is a good boy. I have met him on quite a number of occasions, you know. But now, in my opinion, he should come back to see his father. I fear that it may be for the last time. I must impress upon you that your husband really needs nursing care day and night, and I suggest you may like to have me take care of it. I can send nurses for you. Oh yes, yes, doctor, yes certainly, we can well afford it. We will have whatever you recommend. The doctor pursed his lips and pinched them sideways between finger and thumb. Then he looked down the sides of his nose and said, well, of course, I would have liked him in my nursing home, we could have cared for him very thoroughly in my nursing home, but for the moment I rather fear that such a move might be ill-advised. We shall have to treat him here. I will send a nurse and she will stay for 8 hours, and then another nurse will take over for 8 hours. And I will come to see him first thing in the morning. Now, I will write a prescription and I will have the drugstore send along the medicine by special messenger and you follow the instructions very carefully. Goodbye, Mrs. McCogwaska, and the doctor walked sedately to the door and out through the dining room to his car. For some time Mrs. McCogwaska had sat with her head in her hands wondering what she should do. But then she was roused from her soliloquy by the arrival of the maid. The master is calling for you, madame, she said. Quickly Mrs. McCogwaska rushed up the stairs. Mama, Mama V4V don't have no rabbi come? He asked. A rabbi I should have first. I have a lot that I should talk of, and maybe arrangements could be made for mine son or an old friend to recite the Kaddish. My, my, Moses! Exclaimed his wife. Do you really think you should have a rabbi? Don't forget that you are a professed Catholic. How will we explain to the neighbors that we have suddenly become Jews? But Mama, Mama, how can I die in peace without knowing that I have someone to recite the Kaddish for me? Mrs. McCogwaska stood in deep, deep thought and then she said, I know, I have the solution. We will call in a rabbi as a friend, and after the rabbi has gone we will call in our Catholic father, and in that way we shall be well covered with the two religions and our neighbors." The old man laughed and laughed until the tears came to his eyes and the pain started again. But when he recovered he said, "Oi, oi mama, so you think so bad have I been altogether that I need to have an insurance so one of the two can make the best bid to get me up to heaven? Well, well, mama, so it shall be, but for myself the rabbi I should have real fast, and then when he is gone we can have the Catholic father, and in that way we can be sure we have covered mine passing from two sides at once." "I have telephoned Hoagie, Moses," said Mrs. McCogwasker. "I have told him that you have had a little setback and that I thought it would be a comfort to his father if he returned for a day or two. He is coming immediately." Hoagie sat back and thought of it all again. He relived it. For the moment his pain was forgotten, thinking of those bygone days, thinking of how the big car had raced through the chilly night, roaring through small hamlets and big towns. He remembered the startled expression on the face of a policeman as he jumped out of hiding somewhere and tried to flag down the speeding Hoagie, and then as the car did not stop the policeman raced for his motorcycle and tried to catch up, but to no avail. Hoagie had a good car and Hoagie was a good driver. The policeman must have been a rookie because he soon retired from the race. Hoagie remembered reaching his father's home. Dawn was just breaking as away in the east there were the reds and blues and yellows of dawn flaring across the sky. Later that morning, after he had had a little rest so that his father would not see how tired he had been, he went to see the old man. Father McCogwasker was in bed wearing his yarmulke, the little skull cap which Orthodox Jews wear on certain occasions. About his shoulders he had his prayer shawl. "Hoagie boy, I'm glad you've returned in time. I am a Jew and you are a good Christian Catholic. You believe in doing good turns, my boy, so I want you do something for me. I want you recite the Kaddish, which, as you know, is the prayer for the dead. I want you recite in the old way which is almost forgotten. That should not interfere with your Christian Catholic belief, boy." Hoagie hesitated. He had really taken to the Catholic belief. He absolutely believed the Bible and in the saints and all the rest of it. He believed that the Pope and others of the hierarchy of the Catholic Church had divine powers, so how could he, a good Catholic, suddenly revert even temporarily to the religion of his fathers, the Jewish religion? The old man had been watching his expression, watching him closely. Then he sighed deeply and sank lower in his bed. "All right, boy," said the old man, "I will not trouble you further, but I believe that we all goes the same way home. It doesn't matter at all if I'm a Jew and you're a Catholic, we all go the same way home. If we live a good life we gets the good reward that's coming to us. But tell me boy," he said with a faint smile, "why do Catholics fear death more than any other religion fears it? Why for are Catholics so opposed to all other religions and firmly hold to the belief that unless one is a Roman Catholic no place in heaven there is for them? They must have bought all the tickets in advance, I suppose," said the old man with a laugh. Hoagie groaned aloud as he said, "Father, father, let me get one of the Holy Fathers here now. If you would be converted now then I am sure you would be considered for a place in heaven. As it is, as a Jew, you have no chance at all, father. You will find yourself lodged in hell just like an old author is going to be. I have been reading some of his books lately until one of the priests caught me with them and, oh dear, I had to do a penance because I had been reading a book by that fellow Ramper. In the hospital some time ago a very good Catholic sister wept over him and said that he would go to hell as he was a Buddhist, mind, can you imagine it?" Father McCogwasker looked at his son with compassion, with pity, and said, "Boy, since you've been away and since you embraced the Catholic faith more closely you are indeed becoming bigoted. Never mind, boy. I will get one of my old friends, one who has been as a son to me, and I will have him recite the Kaddish so as not to upset your faith." The old rabbi came to see Father McCogwasker and they talked together for quite some time. The old man said to the rabbi, "My son is changed so that possibly he is no longer my son. He would not read the Kaddish for me, he would not even tolerate talk of our religion. I am going to ask you, mine friend, if you will recite the Kaddish for me." The rabbi placed his hands on his old friend's shoulders and said, "Of course I will, Moses, of course I will. But my own son is a very good man indeed, and I think it would be more meet if he did it instead. He is a young man of the same age group as that of your son. But I am one of your contemporaries, aren't I?"